Environmental activists are trying to shut down Britain's biggest coal-fired power station. The Drax station near Selby in North Yorkshire has been targeted by the protesters because they say it's the single biggest source of pollution in the United Kingdom. It produces 20 billion tonnes of carbon dioxide each year, 4% of the national total, but it also produces 7% of the country's electricity. At the weekend, about 600 protesters set up a campsite near the power station. This morning, groups started to march towards it, ignoring a court injunction not to approach closer than 2 miles. Chief Inspector Barry Smith of North Yorkshire Police said so far 28 people had been arrested.
Protest has taken place from around about 9 o'clock this morning when we had a number of protesters leave the camp. They've split up into a number of groups and they're all being policed by different methods around the area. And they vary from approximately 20 children with accompanying adults walking from the climate camp to Drax to approximately 25 to 30 cyclists cycling around the perimeter. There have been some instances of incursions into the power station itself, and those people that have done that have all been arrested.
I spoke to two of the protesters, Richard George and Tim Eastwood, on the march. I asked them why they wanted to shut the Drax power station down.
Drax power station is the single largest emitter of CO2 in the UK. CO2, as you probably know, is one of the major causes of climate change. And so we're taking action today to show that we're not happy with the way in which the government is dealing with climate change.
But it's also a very large producer of electricity, and it says it's probably the most efficient coal-fired station in the country. Why act against Drax?
It may be the most efficient coal power station in the country, but coal in itself is a very bad emitter of CO2 and not the best way of producing electricity. For example, we could get 40% of the UK's electricity from offshore wind farms, which wouldn't be contributing to climate change in the same way that Drax does.
But you're not going to do that today, are you? If you disrupt supplies, society needs electricity. This produces 7% of Britain's electricity. Isn't that going to cause severe inconvenience for people? Hospitals, traffic lights, all the other things for which we use power?
Well, I think the issue is it's going to cause severe inconvenience to an entire population when the climate change reaches a stage where we can't go back from it. At the moment, we still have a small amount of time to turn round to use less power, to use more renewable sources of power, to use green electricity suppliers for individual houses to have their own renewable generation of power.
But many people in the country would agree with you, and they would say it's a long-term political process. You can't do this overnight, and shutting down a power station and inconveniencing people isn't the right way to go about it.
The government and many, many companies have had the technology to have green or renewable power up and running now if they'd implemented these years ago. So I think people are acting far too late, to be honest. This should have been done many years ago, like maybe 30 years ago perhaps, maybe even longer. We just continue to emit all these emissions which are actively damaging our planet now.
Richard George and Tim Eastwood. Well, the Drax power station is in the Selby constituency of the Labour MP John Grogan. I asked him what he made of the protest.
I'm disappointed that it seems to be moving from peaceful protest into trying to stop the power station. I disagree with some of their philosophy. I think that Drax power station is the most efficient coal-fired power station in the country. It does produce less CO2 than any other coal-fired power station. I'm working quite closely with Drax to try and reduce that further.
But coal is a very dirty material to produce electricity with, isn't it?
Well, it can be made so much cleaner. You know, a generation ago, local people in Selby were debating SO2. By putting equipment on, we've got rid of 90% of that at Drax. Now the debate is CO2. And finally, and I think it's taken a while for the government to come round to the idea of clean coal, but they have in the recent energy review. And for example, there's a lot of research now going on. Within a decade, you could be pumping a lot of the CO2 produced from Drax under the North Sea in so-called carbon capture and storage.
But what these protesters are saying is that the government has just been acting too slowly. They need this kind of action to get them to get a move on.
Well, to be fair, things like carbon capture and storage are still at the research stage, and the government's putting a lot of money into that. There's other simple things like just burning biomass with coal, which I think we could do a lot more on. Really, it comes down to how are people going to be persuaded to take further action. And my fear is if the issue of climate change and making coal cleaner becomes associated with breaking the law, disrupting the power supply, which is ultimately the aim of some of the protesters today, and that would mean hospitals losing power, it would mean industry losing power and people's homes and so on. I think that is seen as unreasonable by most people, whereas the cause itself is seen as an important one.
But the argument put forward by some of them that a bit of disruption will give people incentive to cut down the use.
Well, it's a dangerous site as well, Drax. Surely to goodness, it's better to hold a peaceful protest to highlight the issues that people want to highlight. Trying to run amok on a major industrial site, causing not just disruption of the electricity supply, but potentially danger to themselves and to the staff.
John Grogan. A demonstration of how much the environment is already moving up the political agenda came today from the Conservative Shadow Chancellor, George Osborne. Mr. Osborne was making a speech in Tokyo, where he's gone to see and preach the virtues of their high-speed magnetic train as being less polluting than other forms of transport. He used his speech to suggest that a future Conservative government would want to rebalance taxation to help the environment. He said he'd want to shift the burden of taxation away from good things, like savings, towards bad things, like pollution. But pressed on the Today programme, Mr. Osborne wouldn't give any practical details of exactly how he'd go about it.
What I can do now is set a direction, and the direction is to increase the take of taxes that come from green taxes. And there are, of course, there are different options. You can tax cars. We've already got fuel duty and vehicle excise duty. There's the whole issue of taxing aviation. There are things like landfill taxes. There is the climate change levy, which I think should be replaced by a carbon levy on industry. I have a completely open mind on all these questions.
Fine in principle, but how practical are green taxes? I asked Robert Choate, who's director of the Institute for Fiscal Studies, how much we paid in green taxes already.
The amount raised is about 3% of national income, and so the government is raising about £1 in every 12 that it raises in total from environmental taxes. So that's in 2004 about £35 billion. So it's not a huge proportion of the total, but important nonetheless.
Is it practical, as Mr. Osborne is saying today, to shift behaviour from taxing good things like savings to bad things like pollution?
It's certainly an aspiration that now seems to be shared pretty widely across the political spectrum. The Liberal Democrats have already proposed increasing the proportion of tax revenue derived from environmental taxes. And the Labour Party in its National Policy Forum consultations also says it's, quote, committed to reforming the tax system to increase incentives to reduce environmental damage. And there has been a fall in the proportion of national income raised from environmental taxes over the last few years. And I think there now seems to be this building consensus to push things back in the other direction.
What kind of impact is that likely to have?
It's important to look at where the environmental tax revenues are coming from. A lot of emphasis is put on things like air passenger duty, climate change levy, landfill taxes, etc. But these are really relatively small, raising less than £1 billion each. It's taxes on motorists that at the moment are the most important. In 2004, fuel duty was raising more than £23 billion, vehicle excise duty raising almost £5 billion. So one important question in terms of whether this can be done is, will the public be happy to stomach significant increases in those sorts of taxes? And certainly the idea that you can get away easily with raising taxes on motorists doesn't seem to be fairly obvious from historical experience.
So who would pay green taxes if they do go up? Which part of the population would feel the effect most?
One difficulty, one barrier to the idea of raising environmental taxes is that it frequently hits, proportionately speaking, the less well-off harder than those who are better off. And so there is also the danger that if you're raising more money from environmental taxes, you have to spend part of it on essentially compensating the people who are least able to cope with the increases that have been put on them.
Robert Choate. The former Conservative MP Steve Norris is on the board of the Conservatives' Quality of Life group, looking at all this. He's in our Westminster studio now. Good afternoon, Mr. Norris.
Afternoon.
Can I tempt you to give some of the practical details that George Osborne didn't think he could put? What would the Conservatives want to put taxes on?
No, that's not my job. That's something I'm very happy to leave to George Osborne. But what the work we're doing will do is to ultimately come up with some recommendations which the party can then solidify around.
Haven't you, moving tens of millions of pounds in green taxes? You've got to have some suggestions.
Yes, I wouldn't dodge the point that Robert Choate made. I just wanted to make two observations about that. One is he says that environmental taxes, disproportionately affect those on lower incomes. Interestingly, in relation to fuel duty, the £23 billion, very significant amount that's currently raised in fuel duty, of course, that rather depends on car ownership. In fact, if you were to look at the whole issue of how you make this politically acceptable, regardless of which party's in power, regardless of the sort of immediate tactical political considerations, then I think you have to say that, just as George Osborne pointed out, this is not just another excuse for the Chancellor to stick his hand in your pocket. This is about rebalancing taxation so that, yes, you will pay more in green taxes. You will, for example, see the reintroduction of a fuel duty escalator. I'm quite sure you'll see significant changes in VED, which will concentrate on encouraging people to buy more fuel-efficient vehicles. You'll probably see some sort of differential, perhaps even in the VAT rate applicable to new vehicles, so that actually you deter people from putting those more polluting vehicles into the vehicle park in the first place.
But these are huge sums of money you're talking
they
about.
Are
you prepared, do you think anyone is prepared to take the political unpopularity of pushing up fuel duty, for
well,
example?
I know that what I'd be talking about if I were presenting this sort of agenda is to say you realise that off the back of that we could be talking about, for example, the halving of council tax, something which really hugely and disproportionately affects the poorest people in society and people like pensioners on fixed incomes who are very low emitters of CO2 in terms of their own personal lifestyles, but, you know, hugely disadvantaged by the current council tax system.
But this is all something of a gamble, isn't it? You don't know that the putting taxes up will have the kinds of effects that you expect. This is really in frontier land.
Well, it is in frontier land, but I think there are two things that would persuade me that it's a frontier that we ought to be prepared to walk toward. One is, funnily enough, from my own experience of my old sparring partner, Ken Livingstone. I've over many years now put forward what I believe are rational objections to the working of his congestion charge. I mean, I happen to think that history has now proved me right, as, you know, speeds have fallen back to where they were and volumes have increased and so on. But the one thing I've always given him credit for is that when he put forward an idea which everybody said, rather as you're suggesting, gosh, they'll kill you for this, people didn't do that at all. They shrugged their shoulders and they said, you know what, well, nothing else seems to work, you've got to try it. See? And I sense that the biggest single change that the whole of society is seeing right now is that people, perhaps because of the reports they see daily about weather patterns and what the damage that's being done, you know, in terms of weather, are prepared for government to want to change things. And
well,
I think they're much more receptive than you think.
Steve Norris, thank you very much indeed. Well, let's try that on the government. The Economic Secretary to Treasury, Ed Balls, joins us now.
Good
afternoon, Mr. Balls. Do you think that's true? Is there a willingness to accept big changes in taxation, tens of billions of pounds being moved about?
Well, I think there have been big changes. We were the first government in Britain's history to introduce a climate change levy, which increased the tax on the use of energy to save carbon emissions. At the same time, we've cut VAT for the least polluting cars. We have the first ever zero rate. But let's be clear about this debate. It's about aspiration, which we all share, but it's also about clear policy and commitments and ways forward. And the fact is the Conservative Party have consistently opposed the climate change levy. They've also consistently opposed the increases in tax on fuel, although it's interesting to hear the Conservative spokesman just now calling for the reintroduction of the fuel duty escalator. But the reason why the tax burden has fallen over the last two or three years for environmental taxes is precisely because this government has been freezing fuel duty every year because of the very high levels of oil prices. And I think the question George Osborne failed to answer this morning is he really saying that he thinks that taxes on the motorists should be going up now at a time when petrol prices are so high? And if not, what are his other proposals? The fact is, he's got no proposals
before,
at all.
Before you put any more questions to him, isn't that a question you should be answering? Are you prepared to put up taxes on motorists? I mean, do you accept his point that the green taxes have actually dropped as a proportion of the tax take, and they should be going up, not down?
Well, as I said, the important thing here is to save carbon. And we've actually been cutting VAD for the cleanest cars. So the idea that you can reduce this to tax increases or tax cuts is absurd. But at the same time, we did raise taxes on the motorist in the early part of the government, opposed by the Conservatives. But over the last few years, because oil prices have been so high, and therefore petrol prices have been so high, the right thing to do was to freeze the actual tax take, even though the price was high, and therefore carbon would be being reduced. We're on track to meet our objectives, but the Conservatives at every point oppose the measures we take, and then they turn round and make speeches and claim they've got credentials. The fact is, they've got no policy.
Aren't you making exactly that same mistake now? Here you're being offered what might be a cross-party consensus to make a major change in the way the environment is done, and you're turning around and attacking the Conservatives for what they've done in the past.
I would love to have a cross-party consensus on the objectives, but also on the policies. And if the Conservatives want to join the consensus, they've actually got to tell us what policies they would support, because consistently, whether it's on fuel duty, on the climate change levy, on the landfill tax, they've voted against measures which we've put in place to protect the environment. And at the same time, we have this morning on the Today programme, George Osborne talking about a new investment in a high-speed train link, which he said would protect the environment. The problem is, when you look at the detail, what you find out is that that would cost tens of billions of pounds. If you wanted just to have an ordinary train link between London and Edinburgh, that would cost you £45 billion. To go for this maglev train link would be considerably more expensive.
Let's not get
if you're going to be a serious opposition, though, you need to come along and say, what are your proposals? How would you pay for them? And until then, people won't take you seriously.
Ed Balls, thank you very much indeed. Let's get lost in the details. Thank you very much.